Good morning. It is about 8:05 on Wednesday, March 17th, and present are and this is House Education Committee, and this is Representative Keller, Munoz, Wilson, Edgman, Gardner, Book, and myself, Chair Seaton. Remind everybody about their cell phones, and today we are going to have confirmation hearings for the Professional Teaching Practices Commission. And we have three people with that, or three names before us, and sorry I didn't. Okay, and the first person we will take will be Eric Fry. Should have his resume in your packet. Mr. Fry, would you come forward and place yourself on the record with your name and any affiliation you have?
I'm Eric Fry, and I'm the information officer and a writer at the Department of Education.
Well, welcome to the committee. And can you start off by summarizing why you would want to be on this commission and what are the duties that you're looking at that you think that you could help the commission with?
Well, the commissioner asked me to serve representing the department, and as an information officer, I'm not an educator, but the department, as you know, represents the general public, not a segment of the public or an interest group, so I think it's appropriate to have a non-educator on the commission. It also avoids some conflicts of interest because some of the other staff are educators who regularly deal with teachers. And then I'm a parent with two kids who are either in or have been in the public school system, so I think that's a good perspective. So I have a personal stake in wanting an ethical teaching core. And prior to state service, I was a newspaper reporter for 15 years. I don't know if Representative Edgman remembers me long ago in Dillingham.
Yeah.
And at that job, you know, you have to grasp complex issues pretty quickly and ask questions, and the commissioner felt that I asked good questions of people. What I like about the state's ethics rules is that it's not just a matter of don't steal or something like that. It places a burden on teachers to create a good atmosphere in the schools, an atmosphere that's free of intimidation and harassment. They have an obligation to actively intervene on behalf of students. I think that's, my experience as a parent, that's an extremely important part of our schools, that kids feel safe there. So I'd like to serve on a commission that furthers that goal.
Well, very good. Thank you. Are there questions from the committee?
Yes.
For Mr. Fry? Mr. Booth. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Forgive me. We undertake many different boards here. Could you give me the makeup of this particular board members and their status that you know of?
Well, I don't know the names. It's largely composed of teachers. And that's one of the reasons why I felt it would be useful to have a non-teacher on the board. It is largely composed of teachers and of representatives of the National Education Association. And it's served by professional staff that does the actual investigations.
Right.
Reverend Boot.
Yeah. Mr. Fry, what I was alluding to is how many are on this board? Is it a 7-member board, 11-member board?
Through the chair, Representative Book, I'm not certain of the number of people.
Oh, okay.
Well, and I can appreciate that the commissioner asked you to serve because you asked good questions. He endures us asking many questions. He's not always sure they're good questions that we ask, but we ask lots of questions here as well. So I very much appreciate that. Are you familiar with the report that we got from the University of Alaska? The past legislature required that the university analyze their teacher preparation and see if we could improve those. And so I don't know if you're familiar with that report or not, and I would just like to commend that to you as well, because it's not only looking at ethical complaints, but hopefully the commission, as it goes forward, will be involved in looking at what we can do to further teacher experience and how those teachers that are, of course, the key to education in the classroom can go forward. So I appreciate that. Is there any other questions from the committee? Representative Wilson.
Well, this probably doesn't pertain totally to what we're talking about, but just exactly what does the public information officer do?
It's a variety of tasks. Some of it is answering questions from the public and from researchers and other interest groups when they want information from the department. Some of it is preparing news releases. Some of it is preparing other written documents for the department. If someone asks to give a speech, they might ask me to help them. If we need a white paper on something, I might help with that. And then I've chosen to produce a weekly information report that goes out to anyone who wants it, mostly educators, keeping people up to date on things that are going on.
And I presume that the other members of the committee, I have presumed that the other members of the committee get that report. I get it. But if not, we'll make sure that it gets forward to the other members of the committee. Yes, Representative Munoz.
Thank you, Eric. I just want to say to the committee that when Eric was working at the Juneau Empire as a reporter, that he was excellent and very well balanced and fair and always extremely professional. So I have very high regard for you, and I appreciate your willingness to serve.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, ditto.
Mr. Representative Kelly.
Ditto. I really appreciate your reporting.
Okay, thank you. And I believe that the main function of the commission is to investigate and hear ethical complaints against teachers in their performance of their duties. And, you know, I'm not meaning that I can expand the commission's role in teacher certification and those things, but I think it's very could be very instructive for the committee, not on individual cases, but if there are patterns that we never see that we could help with, or that there are laws or something that need changing, I would encourage that if you see any of those kinds of patterns that could be helpful, that you forward to the committee through the commissioner those items, because unless we hear about them, see those, we're lost to help education from the policy standpoint. So I really appreciate your willingness to serve. And are there any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And now we have Michael Husa. Are you online?
Did you hear me?
We hear you now. Would you introduce yourself and who you represent for the and any affiliations for the committee, and go ahead and explain to us your understanding of the commission's duties and why you would want to serve on the commission.
Okay. I'm Mike Husa. I'm currently in my 19th year of teaching with the Lorain-Kuskokwim School District. I also sit on the NEA Alaska Board of Directors. I've been on the commission for the last 3 years. The role of the commission is the oversight of teacher certification and the ethical applications that result of the behavior from administrators, teachers, who hold certificates. I believe if we're going to continue to be recognized as a profession, we as the classroom teachers and administrators who are in the profession should have oversight within our certificates. And the fact that we best know where the issues lie and when the ethical lines are crossed that we can deal with and recommend appropriate sanctions.
Thank you very much. Are there questions? Representative Munoz.
Thank you, Michael. Do complaints of ethical behavior come from the district or from individuals, individual parents? Or could you just speak to the process of bringing an ethical complaint?
Traditionally, the complaints come from either other educators or the district, but parents also have the right to file complaints. Before they go to the commission, and Pat Truman is the employee that investigates, the district usually gets those complaints first so that they have a chance to deal with them locally. Should they be so egregious or whoever has filed the complaint doesn't feel that appropriate action is being taken, it gets sent on to the commission. But there's nothing that says that a parent can't file a complaint straight into the commission. Obviously, police officers sometimes will file the complaint because there's been a complaint made to them. The department, I guess it's OCS now, Child Services, can file those complaints. But it is open to anybody who deals with the teacher, including students.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. And I think, Michael, you probably heard my comments to Eric about questioning whether you folks have a chance to review the University of Alaska report on teacher preparation, and hope that you will have a chance to review that if you haven't, and make sure that there aren't other things from your experience on the commission that we need to add or change or emphasis in teacher preparation, so hopefully in the future we'll have less work for you.
That's always great.
Is there any other questions for Michael? Seeing none, thank you very much, Michael, for being here. And now we'll go to Jeffrey Hebbard. Jeffrey, are you online, or Jeff?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. Would you go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and who you represent and your affiliations, and again, let us know your understanding of the commission and why you'd want to serve on the commission.
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Jeffrey Hebert. I'm in my 20th year of teaching. I live in Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm a teacher in the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District at Lathrop High School. I teach physical education. I've taught grades K through 12. I've been on the commission for 4 years. It is a very rewarding experience serving on the commission. I see the role of the commission as upholding and enforcing the standards and ethics of the profession. I've always believed in volunteerism, whether it be in my private life in the community or in my professional life, and I just see this as an excellent opportunity to continue to volunteer to the profession, to the state of Alaska, and to the children of Alaska by helping uphold the integrity of the profession.
Well, thank you, and we really appreciate your service. Can I ask you approximately how many complaints or that come before the commission for hearing there are per year?
I'm going to be shooting from the hip to say that as far as complaints that are filed, it must be in the range of 100 that cross the desk of our executive director, and then she does the initial investigation, and then we would see those in report form if she does an investigation and then deems that maybe it's been dealt with appropriately at the local level, or there's not enough information to carry it further, and then we may see it in the form of a hearing or a voluntary surrender of a certificate if it goes further and needs some kind of sanctioning involved.
Thank you. And a question of the public information on those. Do you know, so does the report come out on those, or is it all treated as a confidential personnel matter? How are those things, those different kinds of cases resolved?
Right. Well, obviously there's always a balancing act between confidentiality and then public record. Once a sanction has been put in place, then that becomes part of public record. There's a quarterly newsletter put out by the executive director, or basically the executive director puts it out, but it's put out by the commission. And if there has been any sanction, whether it be a revocation, suspension, or reprimand, those are public record, and those are always listed in that quarterly newsletter. I know it's disseminated amongst the profession to all teachers, principals, superintendents. I've always been under the assumption that it probably circulates through Juno in many areas. And of course, that's all public record and accessible via the PTPC homepage, too.
Okay, thank you. And I think you probably heard my suggestion to the other two members about looking at the teacher preparation policy and report that was given to us by the Regents of the University of Alaska. We had a very good meeting with them, but you look at these things as the commission from a different aspect than we do when we're sitting on policy. So if the commission or the commission members, as you go forward, if you find something that we could help work on through policy, I want to invite the commission to probably go through the commissioner, but to bring that to our attention if there's something that we could do overall to in policy to help in alleviate any of those any of those situations if they are repetitive in nature. Representative Book has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hebbard, in your experience on the commission, you noted that there was approximately 100 of these cases you dealt with a year. Of those, in your experience, can you give the committee the numbers of people that actually have been sanctioned over the course of your experience?
Over the course of my tenure on the commission?
Yes.
Oh, boy. I guess I would put the number of sanctions, if you keep in mind that a formal reprimand from the commission is a sanction, just like a voluntary surrender, just like a suspension of certificate or revocation of certificate, all of those are a sanction. I would put it in the neighborhood of 15 to 20 per year. And I could be off there. I mean, that would be obviously a better question for the executive director to give you the exact number. But
thank you. That answers my question.
Yeah. I mean, keep in mind, as members of this commission, we meet approximately three times a year. So I think you can sympathize with the fact that every time you come to a commission meeting, which is a one or two or three day meeting, you know, the first couple hours you're kind of getting back into the mode of everything that we talked about last time and where we're at, and so when we're between commission meetings, you know, sometimes some of those facts and figures aren't right at the tip of our tongue. I did want to add one thing. Very early in the conversation this morning, there was a question about the makeup of the commission. I just wanted to add that it's a 9-member commission, has 5 teachers on the commission, 1 principal, 1 superintendent, 1 person from the Department of Education, and then 1 person from higher education to make the 9-member commission.
And thank you very much for that.
You bet.
Are there further questions? Thank you very much, Jeff, for being online this morning. Is there any discussion? Representative Munoz?
Thank you. The House Education Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the appointees of Governor Parnell, Eric Frey, Michael Husa, and Jeffrey Hebard for the Professional Teachers Teaching Practices Commission and recommends that the names be forwarded to a joint session for consideration.
Thank you. Is there any objection to that motion? Hearing none, the three members, there are individual sheets coming around for each member, so if you would sign those. And Mr. Hibbard, Husa, and Fry, thank you very much for your attendance and your volunteering to participate on this commission. And so we'll take a brief at ease. we'd like to go back on the record. We have House Bill 206 before us that was kind of a catch-all for several items that we wanted to bring forward and discuss and not particularly have a separate bill on every item. As we have gone forward, these items have had a lot of discussion, and so there is, it's getting late in time. There are a number of issues, and I think what I would like to do is, before we go forward to specific amendments or changes, what I'd like to do is have a discussion among the committee of what we want to see continue as aspects of this bill, if any. And the I'd like to separate that into the three items that it really does. One is it establishes work keys as a that's in section one, page one through line 14, which establishes work keys as a career preparedness and assessment. We're on House Bill 206. And then from lines 15 through 27, we have the other topic of having post-secondary institutions if students pass all three sections of the exit exam. And then we have sections 2 through 6, which dealt with an extended count period modifications. And of course, the impetus behind that was to look at, is there anything that we can do to give a policy incentive for retaining students in class throughout a year. And so those are really three separate issues, and so I'd like to discuss those issues each individually without a motion or anything at this time. Just have committee discussion on do we think that it is important to go forward with each one of those issues. So Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your approach here. And I'd like to talk about the third element in this bill, which is the student count element. And initially, the original proposal on that I kind of liked. But after all the testimony and looking at some of the data and everything, I think that we've sort of missed our mark on it. It first of all, assumes that there is a push-out factor that schools or districts can control. And I'm not certain we've had anything but anecdotal evidence of that. There is an ebb and flow of students kind of fading out during the year and coming back, but I'm not sure that a financial hit for a district is the way to address that. And so what we've tried to do is hold harmless, and then we're ending up just shuffling money around, and we've built this not insignificant requirement of effort for districts that I don't think does anything about the initial problem that we thought we had identified. So I don't think that I'm prepared to move forward with that segment of the bill myself.
Are there other comments on Representative Wilson?
Either one.
I recognize you. But what I would like to do is, since we've started on the third element of this bill, I would like to take the committee's discussion through the third element of the bill, not the first two at this time, and then we'll dispose of this one or not, and then we will. Representative Wilson.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Representative Gardner. Looking at the at the explanations, the districts that sent in comments, and the, especially on this one sheet here, they really, most of them see a drop in February, and but most of them kind of know the reasons why that happens, and they go from kids graduating in January or December, whenever the end of that semester is, so that there is a drop because kids have graduated and they're not there. So that's one. Some of them is just the yearly migration of parents and students out of the area because of fishing. Many times after the other schools see every year after the permanent fund dividends come, they leave, you know. And so, if we could say we definitely know that there's a push-out problem, and we're going to handle it. But I can't feel that we really are seeing, we can't say, yep, that's what the deal is, because I just don't think that that's what we're seeing, or that's what we're hearing. So, and it sounds to me like all of them complain because it would be a real hassle for them to have to do this. So I agree. I think we need to drop that part.
Representative Munoz.
Well, thank you. I agree. I strongly disagree with an expanded count for a lot of reasons that have already been stated, but also the burdens on staff and also the unintended consequence that is placed on smaller schools that struggle with minimum enrollments. And, you know, I don't think our intention is to see small schools have the unintended consequence of possible closure. So, no, I don't support this provision.
Is there any further comment on this second? Representative Edmund.
Yes, I guess I would join the chorus of those that don't support the provision as well. And in talking with the school districts in my legislative district, I think it's pretty clear that there's concern about it, and maybe that some people just don't fully understand what it purports to do. But we're talking facetiously with a couple of them, and I mean this in just in good humor. But we're talking about, if you want to do anything, well, let's change the date that the permanent fund check comes out, and not have that fall within a 20-day count period. And I mean that certainly lightheartedly, but I'll just say that I don't support the provision either.
Thank you. Any other comments on this?
Just thanks for bringing the question forward.
Sure. And I think that we have worked on this strongly. I do want to take a little different perspective on the idea that there's no push-out factor. I mean, I think that Representative Gardner, Representative Book, and myself attended, I attended three, I believe it was, graduation rate work groups. I believe that you attended one or two. And, you know, the whole development of that group looked at all of those factors, and they're the ones that in the end came to saying, what are the factors that push kids out of school? And so I don't want, you know, I'm also supportive of dropping this requirement, but I don't want that to mean that we think that the graduation rate and the loss of students, not only graduation, but the loss of students throughout the year is something that doesn't need to be looked at. I mean, we had testimony from lots of folks. A few districts enforced truancy. Others have testified that they did not enforce it at all, that if a kid didn't want to be in school, they concentrated on the ones that were in school. So I also think that, you know, the complications we've got here in this section, it's hard to design the criteria, but I want to make sure that we don't, by removing this section, say that we, you know, there's no problem identified, and the school districts are doing everything that they can currently to keep kids in school throughout the school year. This may be not the right tool, but I think we need to constantly look for ideas of what, on a policy way, we can encourage teachers, administrations, districts, and in fact, the State Board of Education and the commissioner to develop policies that are engaging of students and keeps them in school. So, Representative Book, did you have a further comment?
I did, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would also echo the thoughts of the committee, of the previous speakers, and like to add that a year ago when we came here looking at this particular problem in particular, I have been since encouraged by some of the recent reports of updating some of the data from some of the districts and their improved performances that we have seen. Certainly, we are striving for excellence here, and we are, you know, will be, we're not going to be satisfied with anything less than the best of creating legislation. However, I have seen and had the reports that we have witnessed in those committees that there have been some significant improvements in many areas, and I'm encouraged by that. Yet, I'm not sure that what this would do would enhance that particular component of what we're trying to do. So I just want to echo the sentiments of the previous speakers.
Okay, and thank you. And I do also want to say that, you know, we devoted a significant amount of time to looking at different ways to two counts, a February count, a extended count, you know, on all different kinds of things. And I want to make sure that we realize that we haven't wasted our time in doing that, because the engagement that we've had with the superintendents and the board of all the school district boards when they were here was significant on this issue. I think it has elevated that issue through our request to districts to generate the data on what was happening through their school year. And I think that some part we have been successful in elevating this issue to something that's being addressed in many different districts across the state. So with that, I'd like to move that we yes.
I do have
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. I do have one comment. Having listened to all the different schools during this time and their comments about it, it did make a difference that if they could plan their school year, there was one area where in here that the counts, they could use last year's count for this year so that they would know ahead of time. And that was something that really seemed to resonate to me, that they were all saying that if they could guarantee a count this year instead of that October count, waiting to see how much money they're going to get this year, if they could use last year's count, then it just is something that they can go by and deal with a lot better than waiting to this year and to see what the numbers are. And then they've already hired the teachers. You know, I think that we need to look at maybe letting them use last year's counts for this year for funding, and then there's no question of how much money it is. They know how many teachers they can, because if they do lose kids, and that does happen sometimes, what they end up, they've already signed a contract with a teacher or not. And so there they are. They can't say, well, sorry, and break the contract. And so they're kind of stuck. So to me, it's just a little bit easier for them if they can use that count from last year. And I don't know whether it's last year's count or how we would do it. Maybe at the count at the end of the year, just take a one-day count. I don't know what to do about that. But and of course, then there's the schools that gain kids that need the extra count. So if they could say, okay, I'll take this count instead because we've gained so many. But you know, I don't think it's fair to actually penalize the schools where if they've dropped numbers, because they've already had to hire those teachers. They've already, those contracts are signed. So that's my comments.
Well, thank you. The problem is the structure of the bill is they would take the previous year's October count after a full year, the way the bill is structured, and then they would be getting paid on a previous year, and with them we would have to build in a one-way ratchet up, and so we would be funding all districts for previous year or migrations. I think that we would have a hard time getting through that provision through the system, because it's going to be a significant increase in the number of students we're funding for a year, because we're going to say, well, you no longer have these students, but we're going to pay you for those, but anybody that's got more students, we're going to pay you for the more. And so it's going to have a base student allocation implication, and I don't know what those numbers would be, but every you know, I understand the cushion where we could say, well, yes, you have declining enrollment, so since you're declining, you get paid for when you used to have more students. But I don't think that made sense to me in coordination with changing account period and everything else. But I think that would be something that, sure, school districts would like, but I don't think that we could get it through our legislative process as a single item of saying, we're going to make these counts last year or this year, whichever's greater. So that's my only comment. Does it, other members have comments on that? I was making a motion to remove sections 2 through 6 of the bill. And if there's, I mean, we could do it, Representative Wilson, if you wanted to make a conceptual, we could do that. But the structure of the bill as it is right now, I think, relies on, I mean, we can't just, I think that would have to be a section that would have to be modified to make it work.
And the title too.
Yeah, title.
Wasn't it?
Yes.
It was in here, wasn't it?
And the amendment. The amendment would also change the title for removing the student count period for school funding period. So just. And that's, you know, conceptual amendment here of removing that element of the bill. Do I hear an objection to the motion?
Object just for the
sure,
Representative Gardner. Comment. I think that just for Representative Wilson's comments, Section 3, I believe, is what she's looking at. And then I'll remove my objection. I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, you're right.
Is there any further objection to the motion? Let's see. Do we, Secretary, do we know what amendment number that would be?
That'll be amendment number 2.
Okay, thank you. So amendment number 2 has been adopted, and if you wish to put something else in, we can have another motion structuring it differently. So amendment number 2 is a conceptual amendment to remove the all the information on a changing count period for school funding purposes from the bill. And that was adopted. And now we have two other issues. One is section 1 through page 2, line 14. And that is talking about secondary student career assessment, work keys, and the integration work that we had there, and where that would be
ongoing ability to go through that career assessment, and then the highest grade would be, or the highest levels on each one of those assessments would be on the transcripts. And part of this is so that we have a something that can serve to signify the usefulness to for high school graduation for the employment community, as well as providing an incentive for students to work all the way through their senior year in high school. Is there any comments on section one of the bill? Representative Gardner?
Yes. I'm not sure that we need, on page 2, lines 24 through 26, this language. I think it creates confusion, potentially expectations on the part of students.
Representative Gardner, we're just going through page 2, line 14 at this point.
Oh, that is section 1, though.
Yes.
Right, of the bill?
But what we're talking about is section 1 through page 2, line okay. 14.
All right.
Lines 15 through 27 is the other part on the post-secondary education. We okay. have something, some more information. Representative Munoz.
Thank you. Just a question. The work keys is already required, is that right? Or given in the 10th grade?
Representative Munoz, we can get Eddie up, but work keys this year will be required for all 11th graders.
11th grade?
Yes. But what we're doing is we're saying that in this program, what we're saying is we want districts to use work keys as a more holistic measurement. You know, it starts down with work train or WIN program in middle school. They come up through, they're going to be taking it mandatorily in the 11th grade currently. What this does is says in senior year, we'll have that, and also that the your highest score on work keys will go on your transcript so that employers know. And I
okay
and rep them in.
So this would require the test to be given a second time, is that correct, or just one time?
This would just require the opportunity, I believe. Each should require in grade 12. So, Mr. James, would you come up?
For the record, Eddie Jeans, Director of School Finance
with
the
Department
of Education.
We couldn't let you sit here a whole day without coming to the table. The way we've got this structured right now is we were structuring this through so that there would be a test in grade 12. As you read this, is the current structure, of course, that's regulation, isn't it, in grade 11?
Mr. Chairman, the current requirement is in Department of Education regulation, and it is grade 11, yes.
So,
and Representative Munoz.
Would this replace that requirement and have the test given in the 12th grade, or would we do it twice?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, this would put into law a requirement that all districts provide the assessment to students in grade 12. I believe we would have to go back to the state board and see if they want to continue with the 11th grade requirement.
So that would be a state board of education. Did the state board establish that requirement?
Mr. Chairman, the state board did establish the assessment requirement in the 11th grade in regulation, yes.
Okay, thank you. Representative Wilson.
Well, to me, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To me, I think that if you're going to give it in grade 12, it's too late, because part of the reason that you give it is to so that the kids kind of can say, oh, if I want to be a carpenter, I have to have this kind of education, and I don't have it yet, so this gives me a chance to get it. So I think that if they're going to give it, I can see where at grade 12 they can say, oh, I have met these qualifications, and then the wherever they, their employer, wherever they're going to go to get a job, can look at that and see what they've accomplished. But I don't think so. I can see why we would give it for that reason, but I think it needs to be given way before grade 11 or 12, as far as I'm concerned, because I think the kids need to be thinking ahead and planning. And this would start them to do that. So I think if we're going to require it, we should require it at you know, ninth grade or eighth grade or somewhere, and then again at 12th grade, so that they can show some future employer what they have accomplished. So that just probably. Maybe I'm totally wrong on that, but that's where my thinking is right now.
Representative Boop.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Jeans, how would it impact the department if by regulation you had to do one in 11th grade and now by statute another one would have to occur in 12th grade?
Through the chair, Representative Boop, if this passed in statute, it makes us provide or make school districts provide the assessment in 12th grade. I'm not sure what the state board's position would be on the 11th grade requirement. So I guess I can't answer that part of your question. In response to Representative Wilson, we already require districts to provide a similar assessment, not work keys, it's WIN, which is aligned to work keys in the 8th grade. So students are exposed to this assessment in the 8th grade. They get similar scores. The difference is with work keys, you get a certificate that shows what your scores were. With the WIN program, students can go in and they can take additional coursework to help improve their scores in the areas that they scored low. So the exposure that you were talking about is occurring under the current regulation. I believe what the state board would do is remove their 11th grade requirement and go with, because the law requires 12th grade. Basically, you're pushing it out 1 year. But that whole system's already in place to expose students to this assessment in the 8th grade. Okay. They can work on improving their skills so they'll score higher. Right now, the state board says 11th grade. Your law says 12th.
And Representative Wilson, you know, we are working on this. What this provides also is a statutory guideline for the districts to provide a report to the student on the results and post-secondary, the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education for information needed for student eligibility for financial assistance. And so what we're doing, I believe, with Section 1 or this first portion of Section 1 we're discussing is we're saying for those 70% of students in our schools that are not going to college, we are establishing something that career readiness is a vital state interest, and we want those students to be there, and we're going to make the high school diploma or transcript meaningful for employers. You know, I think that we will at some point be looking at removing the high school qualifying exam. That was its intention when it first passed, was to make a high school transcript, a high school diploma meaningful. And what we're trying to do with this is give actual meaning, not minimum meaning, so that there will actually be meaning that people across the state and employers, when somebody graduates from high school, they'll know what that means because they can request those transcripts and see the level of accomplishment. And we're not specifying work keys in here. We are presuming from what we have done that work keys would be probably what the state board would require or would do, but they are going to, you know, in the future, it could be that they determine that there's a different assessment other than work keys that better implements the policies of the state of getting kids on track and also just want to reiterate that one of the major concerns that we heard a lot of times was students pass that test and then they get senioritis, and there's other than class time, other than seat time and not failing a grade, a lot of kids aren't using their senior year to a whole lot of advantage. And I don't mean 90% of the kids. I mean, but there's a significant population, at least that's what we've heard, that aren't using it. And this gives them a reason, because it's going to be on the transcript. And in future competition for jobs, they would be well advised to elevate their scores. Representative Edmund?
I had a question.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Oh, did you?
Yes, sorry.
You got Edmund first, and then Wilson. And then Muno.
I think I'd have to agree with Representative Wilson's comment about grade 11 maybe being more appropriate in terms of timing. And I guess what I'm hearing from the department is that given that the Board of Education has already approved this in regulation, this would be on top of all that. And so they'd have to go back and sort out. And it sounds to me, the bill says shall require, that the Board of Education, in my view, would have no choice but to decide on whether they should eliminate the 11th grade aspect in regulations, because this will be in law. They've got to do it in 12th grade. So, do you want to require schools to do it twice? I guess the other thought is the Governor's Scholarship Program. That this is, we set the bar this high with the Governor's Scholarship Program. Now we're kind of setting the bar a little bit lower. Or at least as I sort of think about this in real rough terms, relative to education reform and all the discussion we've had in this committee, education reform, and I'm sort of thinking out loud here, but does this provision right here, again, in the 12th grade vis-a-vis the 11th grade, which is already in place, sort of serve our purpose asking students to achieve a little bit, to achieve more, as opposed to meeting sort of some pretty basic skill sets here, vis-a-vis the, was it 3 years of math, science, language arts, and social studies that's in the scholarship program. I may be off base, Mr. Chairman, but that's kind of what occurs to me as I look at this provision. And again, this is in the 12th grade, this section of the bill, not the 11th grade, which is already in regulation. So I guess for those two reasons, and I'll admit I haven't articulated very well, I don't know that I can support this provision.
Let's see, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Eddie, the WIN program then that you say is given in the 8th grade?
Correct.
Now, is it similar to Work Keys, so that the kids kind of know if they pick something where they have to go, if they decide on, they want to be a airplane pilot or wherever, they can look and see what classes they still need?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the two programs are aligned. They, the careers that are listed in those programs are aligned. So the answer is yes. So and they test the same things. The difference is at the end of when you take your work keys, you get issued a certificate that's recognized nationally.
Follow up,
Representative Wilson.
Okay, so. I'm just in it, so I take the WIN test when I'm in eighth grade, and is that sufficient so that when I'm in 10th grade I can go back and look at that and see, okay, I did this and this, and I still need to do this? I mean, is that in their folder or something, so that, and do all the schools give it?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, all the schools give the when they're required under regulation to provide that assessment in the 8th grade. The training that we provide school districts, we don't want them to wait to look back at how a student did on the WIN product. You get the assessments back and you start exposing them to different types of careers, and you get them to look at their scores and what kind of jobs that their scores reflect that they would be trainable in. And you start working down that pathway to improve their scores so they would be able to go into that career that they desire. So I think the process is already in place through our regulations. This simply would move the work keys assessment, which we can't really say it's work keys, it's a career and technical assessment, from 11th grade out to 12th grade. And this also requires us school districts to put the results on the transcripts. I don't think that requirement's in our regulation, but I'd have to double check for you. Okay,
follow up.
Representative Wilson.
I still want to know whether they, a school kid, can go back and say, "Gee, I'm thinking about what I should have done, and maybe I'd better start in on it." I mean, is there some way for that child to go back and look at that and say, "Man, I've got to start"? You know, that's what my, who keeps them? I mean, are they? Does the counselor? Not all schools have counselors. So, I mean, so what I'm saying is, can the child say, "Golly, I took that in eighth grade, and you know, didn't mean very much then, but now I'm in 10th grade, and I want to look at it again so that I can see what I need to do"? Because some schools are, you know, let's just face it, some schools they don't have counselors, so how does that work? So I guess what I want to know is that, can they look at that? Can they go back and reevaluate their own thoughts at that time so that we can say we only need to do this in 12th grade, because then we'll know how they're qualified, and that's better than 11th grade, you know, so that they can go on and get a job somewhere.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I will have to check on what the requirements are for keeping that in the student's permanent records. I don't know what those requirements are. As I mentioned earlier, our training of school districts is to get those students involved, engaged immediately in eighth grade. You don't want them to take the assessment, set it aside, and then go, "Hey, how'd you do on that eighth grade assessment in 10th, when you're in 10th grade?" You want them engaged in the process early, and you want them thinking about their future and making those choices early on. So unfortunately, I'm going to have to get back to you on access back to the eighth grade test in later grades.
Do you know, Mary?
Okay, Representative Edgman on that point, and then we have Munoz and Gardner.
Yes, just really quick on that point. Does the WIN assessment, would that help, you know, that's in the eighth grade, that help sort of realign certain students to realizing that they may be, you know, not doing what it takes to participate in the Governor's Scholarship Program for the post-secondary?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, absolutely. In the GPS bill for the career track, it refers to a career assessment, and we intended to use the work keys for that career assessment. So students would be exposed at eighth grade what their scores potentially could be and their areas of weakness that they would need to work on.
Representative Munoz.
Thank you. Well, you know, I appreciate the intent of this provision, but I think we need to work with the State Board of Education and try to get more feedback so that we're not duplicating efforts and requirements. And also, I think it's important to work with the State Board to kind of maximize opportunities in coordination with the GPS program. So I kind of feel like we're getting ahead of ourselves with this provision, because we're already offering the test in the 11th grade, and this would then put it into statute in the 12th grade. I'm a little bit uncomfortable with where we're going here.
Okay, and I just want to say before we go to Representative Gardner and then back to Wilson, that remember we had a different reason for putting this in than the 11th grade. The 11th grade is something so you could know what we were trying to do was have something so there would be continuous reason for improvement through your senior year. And so that is different than taking a test. I mean, it's kind of like the high school qualifying test. If you pass in your sophomore year, then you're done. If you do this in the 11th grade and you're done with it, we're back to the situation of, and we don't have it on the transcript. There's no, you know, we've lost that impetus for trying to keep kids involved in their senior year is, and I'm not meaning to argue, I just mean to remind folks of why we had this provision in here and what we were, what it was different than the scholarship program globally idea. And it's Representative Gardner and then Boot.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually agree very much, and we started out recognizing that the high school graduation qualifying exam was not only not doing what it was intended to do, but it had an unintended adverse consequence for many students, and we wanted to change that in a way that was much more meaningful. To me, doing the test in the final test in the senior year and having it go on the transcript makes all kinds of sense. I mean, this is where we want to say that in eighth grade, the students take the WIN test. They can see where their strengths and weaknesses are and make a somewhat informed sort of general view of where they're likely to be successful and do well and plan their college years. And we've had other testimony about a concentrated effort through school districts to help kids do that, make their own plans, and know what they have to do. The eighth grade test is a kickoff for that, and it culminates in the 12th grade test, where is your success, and how have you done? But I do have a question for Eddie. On page 2, starting on line 2, subject to the availability of appropriations, the department shall obtain a license that enables school districts to administer the assessment described in B of this section with no charge assessed to the district by the vendor of the assessment. There, I don't see anything that says school districts can't have students take the test, work keys, multiple times, maybe take it in 11th grade and the students can say, oh, gee, I really need to bone up on my applied mathematics. I know what I have to do. And it's a process, and it's just the culmination in the 12th grade. That is that correct in terms of being able to take it multiple times?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, that students can take it multiple times, but what we encourage them to do is take the WIN program. It's a little cheaper, and it doesn't result in a certificate being issued every time you take it. That's part of the Work Keys program, is you get this certificate, and we encourage them to use the WIN product, which, as I mentioned earlier, is aligned to Work Keys.
Thank you. And then one other comment in the
Gardner.
Same line, Mr. Chair, is one of the committee members talked about working with the board so we're not duplicating efforts, and I'd say we set the policy here, and the board works on implementing it, and I think we shouldn't not do something because of what they're doing, but rather do what we think is right and then let the chips kind of fan out as they do.
Representative Boop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can speak from personal experience here. 50% of the populace of my particular children in their senior year showed that there was no incentive whatsoever. And we had to go into school and make a contract with that person in order for that person to complete high school, because there was almost no interest shown in any of it. The requirements had been met. She had established where she was going to go to school. And, you know, for her to even be there and focus on any part of the education, it took a bloody contract, and her blood was on the contract. So what I'm saying is that in order to provide incentives to make take away the peer pressure distraction that occurred while they're in those final grades, I think it's very important to reestablish focus. Focus being, you know, in many ways that final year of high school is one of the most important years that they face when they get into their you know, when they address how they're going to enter the outside world. So I'm supportive of the initial intent of doing this, and I agree with the previous speaker about, you know, the motive that are being provided by the GPS and all the rest of that, the incentives and the mentoring and everything else, needs to take place throughout the school system. I don't disagree. But there has to be a way where, you know, we create a doorway that they have to go through on the exit. And I think that, you know, this is the intent of what we're trying to do here. And I'm not trying to put words in the chairman's mouth, but this is where we were coming from the onset with this.
Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that's the reason I questioned Eddie so diligently, was the fact that if the schools don't follow through with that win, that has to be in their, that should be in their file. That should be, you know, not just the year they took it in eighth grade and the eighth grade teacher knew what the results were and none of the rest of the teachers do. I mean, I think that, that if the schools don't have that handy so that each teacher can look at that or however they do those things, I'm not sure. But I think that's a key to try to get those kids to realize, you know, all along the line. And if they've picked an area that they want, then each teacher needs to know that. And needs to encourage them. And if the schools don't have that somewhere where it's easily accessible, shame on them. And so we need to, I mean, as a policy thing, I think that if the win can be taken as many times, and I don't know how many times it would need to be taken, but I definitely know that an eighth grader, some of them are going to say, oh, wow, yeah, and some of them are going to pop up and say, yeah, this is what I got to do. But we all know that there's plenty of them that are going to, that's not going to mean a hill of beans, anything. And so somewhere along the line, they've got to be reminded of that or something. So I think it's, with that, all that in mind, I think that at the 12th grade level, if they can go out and say to some employer, This is where I scored on this, and of course then we're going to have to make sure that we are educating all the employers about all this, but so that an employer knows what that means. But I changed my mind. I am changing my mind on that for the simple reason: if we do the win, and if it's used correctly in the school, it can be a wonderful tool. But I don't, you know, when they don't even know where they're kept and who keeps them, and if they're available for the next teachers, then it's not worth hardly anything. So it all depends on how the school uses the results of that, and how they use that as a tool for that child for the rest of his school years. So that's where I'm coming from. And so with that in mind, if the schools, and I'm hoping that the Board of Education really looks at that a little bit, and that the department does, so that we're using that really as a tool. If we're given it, then make sure where we're following through, and each year that kid should be reminded of that by somebody.
So, Mr. Jeans?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just reading through the regulations again, and the WIN assessment is not only given in the eighth grade, but it's also given in the sixth grade. So there is this continuum that you're describing that is occurring already.
Good.
And the regulation also allows the students to take that assessment as often as they want. So it's required in sixth, eighth grade. They can take it again at a later grade if they'd like to see how their scores are doing. And then under the current regulation, they're required to take the work keys, which results in the certificate in the 11th grade.
Representative Edgman.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to maintain my objection to adopting this section in the bill, and for a couple reasons. One is I remain unconvinced that, you know, as my colleague to the left mentioned, we in the legislature do set the policy, but I'll tell you, and again I say this with a little bit of a smile on my face, that there are a lot of times we set policy that we shouldn't set, And I'm not prepared to supersede the judgment of the department and the Board of Education at this point, because I quite frankly haven't heard enough convincing evidence that that's the case. I'd also argue that you look at provision A and B, there's two shells in there. Shall require a student, you go to B, the commissioner shall select, and then it says must assess a career student aptitude. Then you go to the next page, C, subject to the availability of appropriations, the department shall. So I guess I would wonder, you know, there's going to be a fiscal implication of this. The department is going to have to fight every year to get money for this, because it says in number two, you've got to provide the districts with training and support in administering the assessment, which may or may not be in lieu of what's happening in the 11th grade. And then you've got to provide a report to each student, and three, on the results of the student's assessment. So there's a fiscal implication of this as well. And I don't get a clear-cut vision of what this does in lieu of the 11th grade test. We just heard a second ago, the 6th and the 8th grade win process, and the student have the ability to take that anytime thereafter. So, you know, I may be the one dissenting vote, but I'm gonna hold fast and firm to my objection.
Thank you. And, you know, I think that we need to also remember that what we've got is we've established in the GPS a voluntary optional pull. If you want to take 4 years of math and 4 years of science, then, and you know ahead of time to do that, it's totally voluntary, whether kids do that or not. This is trying to establish in state policy something that says, you know, you're going to need to take this assessment. This is going to be on your transcript. And so all of a sudden we have a requirement. So if we want to go back and say that all the kids are self-directed and self-motivated and they're all going to proceed to get a 2.5 or above, on the technical track, there's no discrimination above the 2.5. I know some members of our committee argued against that, but that's where it is. It's a 2.5 GPA and above, and so the individual performance above that is only tied into work fees. In other words, a certificate that actually is on the transcript, the results are going to be in the transcript. We shouldn't also forget that if people want to take this more times, they can also work with the Department of Labor, because our Department of Labor is using this. It's just that if we want to say that there is going to be significance to the high school diploma, and there's a way in which we can look at in the future saying that the high school qualifying exam is really a duplicate of something that is more directly addressed with this assessment, I think that we need to have some assessment, because otherwise we're just removing any assessment for the high school diploma. So I guess those are my comments. And there, Representative Gardner.
Might I add, Mr. Chair, and I agree with everything you said, but we're also putting the work keys in place, which goes on the transcript. It's available to employers if we pass this, but it doesn't have the same high stakes that the high school graduation qualifying exam does, which is, you know, eliminating the possibility of high school graduation for students who can't pass it. This isn't a pass-fail. It's rather an evaluation assessment with the information that's available.
And you're exactly right there. I'm not meaning that they're equivalent. I'm just meaning that there is a tool to evaluate what a high school diploma means if we have this, whereas and that was one of the reasons for the high stakes test, was to say that the employment community doesn't know what a high school diploma means, because there wasn't some
standard
some standard. And now, with if we have this on the transcripts, at least the employment community can say, oh, well, we know that you accomplished a certain amount and what that amount was. So, Representative Wilson.
No comment.
Is there anyone else on this? Well, I'll make a motion that we I guess it's not a motion. We have 206, and we have that in there. So,
Mr. Chairman,
unless there's a motion to remove,
I'll make a motion to remove that section from the bill.
Okay, there's a motion to remove section 1 through page 2, line 14 from the bill. There's an objection. Have we had all our discussion? Mm-hmm. We have. Let's call the roll.
Amendment 3, HB 206.
And repeating the amendment is to delete section 1 through lines 14 on page 2 of the bill.
Representative Booth.
No.
Representative Gardner.
No.
Representative Munoz.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Representative Edgman.
Yes.
Representative Keller.
Yes.
Chair Seaton.
No.
I have 3 yeas, 4 nays.
So vote of 3-4, amendment number 3 failed to pass. Representative Wilson.
I would like to move amendment number 4.
Amendment number 4, Representative Wilson.
Unless you want to finish out that bottom part there at all.
Yes.
Go ahead and do that
okay.
First.
That amendment is not being offered at this time. So the third provision of the bill is on page 2, lines 15 through 26. And lines 15 through 26 deals with the provision for enrollment in post-secondary classes, shall we say, in the state when a student has passed all 3 sections of their high school qualifying exam. And so I would like to have everyone look at, there was two handouts. One is a legal opinion from Legal Services from Jean Michelle, and that was responding to a question that was brought up about if we put this in and school districts are currently having teachers that are voluntarily teaching dual course credits, would this mean that those teachers would then have to be paid separately for that dual credit education? And this legal opinion basically says no, but there could be specific contract provisions in specific districts that could do something else. But as a general rule, it does not require the districts to compensate teachers differently if they're teaching a dual credit course. And so I just wanted to put that on out here. I don't think that's going to be what makes this rise or fall, but I wanted to make sure that the public knew that we had addressed the question that had been brought to us on that. Representative Wilson and Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do think I want to present my amendment number 4 now before we look at this. It might make a difference what we do with this.
Okay.
I move amendment number 4. It's a conceptual amendment to change the title and add another section that would get rid of the exit exam.
Can we hold that? Just for a moment.
Okay.
So would you withdraw that for right now?
Okay, I'll withdraw it.
Okay, let's just have a little more committee discussion on this, and we have this legal opinion. Is that on the legal opinion, Representative Gardner? Or?
No, it's not on the legal opinion.
Then I'd like to draw the committee's attention to, we have a chart that was passed out today and that deals with this. And Mr. Jean, would you explain what the chart says?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The department surveyed the school districts to see which districts are currently offering dual credits. As you can see, there's basically five school districts that currently are not offering some form of dual credit or university level courses. I think you'll also see that the five are very small, remote school districts. We do have a mixture on who pays for the credits, and we also have a little blending of negotiated or reduced rates for those college credits. So actually, I was quite surprised the number of school districts that are currently doing this.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Gardner.
Exactly to this point, I would like to offer an amendment to actually delete lines 24 through 26. And this is the language that had some confusion about requiring school districts to make arrangements for the fees. And I think that somebody reading that, even though we had testimony to the contrary, might think that school districts had to pay for it or something like that. This chart that we got basically says that of the 49 districts who do already do college high school credit, 70% of them pay for all or part of it through the school or the district, and 57% of them already have negotiated rates. And I think the point is here that we don't have to tell school districts to do this. I think they're doing it on their own because it's the right thing to do for students. And I think that we don't have to have the confusing language in this legislation.
Okay. Discussion.
And I'm asking people not to move amendments yet. Let's just have a discussion first.
Okay, I'll remove that.
Thank you. Representative Keller.
Actually, I said object. It would be more appropriate, as long as it's discussion, to say that I would offer a friendly amendment that we just take this section out. It's totally unnecessary. I think that the fact that the school districts are doing what they're doing, to me, that gives me pride in those districts. We don't want to meddle with this, with statute. Get the thing out of there. Let them be innovative. Help them be innovative, you know, not address the same law.
Okay. And this is why I'm asking for those amendments to be held off, because I don't think that there's much support for maintaining this thing in there, and I don't want to go through a long amendment process and then just rip the section out, because I'm not supporting the section either, and I'm not hearing much support for it. So,
Mr. Chair, may I respond to that?
Representative Gardner.
I have some sympathy to the previous speaker, except we have 30% of districts who aren't participating financially. Never mind. They're still participating and letting students do that. Okay.
Further discussion on lines 15 through 26.
Well, I have one comment.
Representative Munoz.
It seems that the district, either in cooperation with their local post-secondary schools or with the individuals involved, is finding a way to fund this program. And if we put it into statute, then doesn't it become a responsibility of the state to cover those courses? So I do, you know, I'm concerned about that as well.
Sure. I understand the concern. I don't think it does the way we've structured it here, because the way it was structured, the district would be responsible for making arrangements for those fees. But but I really don't think that we're, that there's support for this section among the committee. So does somebody else, or do you want me to just make an amendment to remove lines 15 through 26? Or Representative Wilson, did you want to make that amendment? Or, I mean, it doesn't matter.
I'd be glad to. Okay. Then that's amendment number four?
That'd be amendment number four. Six? Oh, okay, we've withdrawn, and okay.
Okay.
I've been,
So I move amendment number six to remove on page two, lines 15 through 26.
And is there objection to amendment number six, which on page two removes lines 15 through 26? And conceptually, can I ask you to offer that conceptual motion? So, okay. And that's offered conceptually, so if there's changes in the title, they'll be removed as well. Is there any objection to the conceptual amendment number six, removing the student enrollment and post-secondary institution language from the bill? Seeing none, we have adopted amendment number six, removing lines 15 through 26 and any other references to that in the bill.
Chairman?
Representative Edgman.
Now that we're down to one section.
we are down to one section.
I want to go back to my earlier point and maybe put Eddie on the spot here, but what is the fiscal implication of this one section? I mean, assuming that...
Which section is that? I just deleted them all.
This is section one, and I'm sort of covering ground that I already covered, but assuming that the department does have to do this career preparedness assessment of the school districts in the 12th grade, you know, if you had to write a fiscal note, what is this going to be, an indeterminate fiscal note, or do you have a sense of what the cost is going to be?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, the fiscal note will be zero because we're already doing it through the regulatory process, and it's already included. The cost of those assessments are already included in our budget.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Edgman,
that's a follow-up, but that assumes that the 11th grade exam would be done away with. The assessment in 11th grade would be done away with.
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, that's correct. I still believe that we would only do the work keys once because of it results in the certificate and the placement of those scores on the students' transcripts.
So, just
Representative Edgman.
So, on the bottom part of section one, again, it talks with providing districts with training and support and a report to each student and so forth. Does the department currently do that for 11th grade assessment?
Through the chair, yes, we are. Actually, this section of legislation almost mirrors our regulation, with the exception it's at 12th grade instead of 11th.
Mm-hmm.
And Representative Edgman.
And as you told us earlier, you don't know until you would consult with the Board of Education whether or not that they would actually be in favor of moving from 11th grade to 12th grade.
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, I can't speak for the board what they might do in future action, but I'm telling the committee right now, I believe the department's recommendation would be to drop the 11th grade work keys assessment. They can still utilize the WIN. We don't want to do the work keys assessment in the 11th grade, issue a certificate, put it in their transcripts, and then turn around and do it again in the 12th grade. That doesn't make sense.
Well, just as a
Representative Edgman
follow up, because I'm still unconvinced about the section. What was the rationale at the board's level in going with 11th grade versus the 12th grade? What's the argument for doing it in 11th grade versus the last year of school?
I the regulation still allows a student to take the assessment again if they want to increase their scores, and the regulation allows for that higher score to be placed on their transcripts on the student record. So I think that that was the reason why they did it at the 11th grade. Do it at the 11th grade. Everybody gets their scores posted. If you want to try to increase those scores, then you could take that test again, but it wouldn't be required.
And Mr.
Representative Edmund.
You know, I appreciate the diligence of this committee, if not doggedness of this committee, and trying to really sort of explore these concepts, because I think we've done a great job in exploring some concepts that ultimately two of the three provisions in here turned out to be unacceptable to committee. That may not be the case with the third, but if there is a motion to move the bill to committee, I'm going to object, because I want to be on record as not supporting it. And as a concept, I'd like to see this come back, but I'd like to hear from the board, maybe the department, in more detail why it is that moving it the assessment of the 12th grade really is beneficial. Because again, from the committee discussion, everything I've heard, I'm not there yet.
Reverend Keller.
Thank you, Chair Seaton. I concur, but I also want to add that I really appreciate the process. I mean, it's been a really good process. I've learned, and we've built a relationship and everything, but I can't see us pressing on with this bill.
Reverend Boot.
I was going to ask Eddie, through the chair, if this prevented students from requesting taking this prior to the 12th grade. Can a student go in at any time and from 9th grade through 12th grade and say, I want to take this test?
Through the chair, Representative Book, as I mentioned earlier, I think we would encourage the student to take work when, mm-hmm. which is aligned to work keys. It's a cheaper test to administer, mm-hmm. and it produces the same information that a student would be looking for. So would this prohibit a student from asking to take it in the 11th grade? I don't think so, but it would require them to take it again in the 12th grade,
right,
under the proposed legislation.
Representative Book.
Once again, the significant difference is the certificate. So that basically what we're talking about here is they could take the wind tests all they wanted, and it would be equivalent to taking this final test, with the exception that this one provides a certificate.
Through the chair, Representative Book, that's correct. The legislation also requires that it be recorded on the student's transcripts. And under our current regulation, the scores are reported on the student's cumulative record. So it's already recorded in the student's transcripts as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So, Mr. Jeans, are you saying that if does an employer have access to the student's records or the transcript? If someone's submitting something to an employer institution, do they open their, do they have their records available, or is it the transcript that's available to send to either a post-secondary institution? Or
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to have to follow up on that, because I'm not sure if the cumulative record means transcripts.
Yeah. Okay, and
On that point?
On that point?
Yes. I was on a committee for 14 years, and it was to look at post-secondary vocation, and one of the things we did look at was high school transcripts. So those students that had those or had access to those, or applicants, they would provide us with the high school transcripts so we could look at what they did, especially in math, throughout the course of their high school careers. And so it was requested, but sometimes it wasn't available or submitted, or they had a GED, which then we had to look at the equivalency of those. So I can attest to what some employers did. I can't attest to what everybody does.
And I think that what we need to do is have the department come back to us and let us know whether, when it's in their cumulative records, whether that means it's in their transcripts or not. That may or may not be something that is confidentially held in the student's records.
Right.
As to where it's placed, and we'll find out. I think that we, you know, earlier on in this, we had the commissioner in here, and we talked to the commissioner quite a bit about this. I don't recall all those conversations. I never recall the commissioner objecting at all to this portion of the bill as far as the 12th grade, but I think that we need to get back and find out whether there is an objection to that. And so I think that's an ongoing conversation, and Eddie, you'll get back to us with that other information.
Yes, sir.
And so we'll just put this bill aside for now.
Let me do my amendment.
Oh, wait a minute. Sorry. Representative Wilson had an amendment. She out in Barbara.
Okay, so I move amendment number 4.
Number 7.
Seven. Number 4 and 5, Mr. Chairman, where we
So I have to, okay.
Just use.
Okay, so number 7. I move amendment number 6, conceptual amendment number 7, that changes the title and adds a new section to the bill that gets rid of the high stakes exit exam.
So that's to remove the requirement for completion of a high school exit exam for obtaining a diploma,
right,
or graduation. Is that correct?
That's correct.
We have a motion, conceptual motion number 7. I'll object for discussion. Representative Boop.
I just wanted to hear the sponsors. Okay.
I feel that. Our whole reason for working and spending time and really trying to figure out how to keep kids in school and how to get them to graduate onto something else, whatever it is, even if it's the military, and this high stakes exam, if they don't pass it, they can't even get into the military. And some of these kids, that would be one reason they might need direction in their life and someone to tell them what to do all the time, you know. I just, because there's a lot of kids that we have heard that they, if they can't pass that exam, they just drop out because they say, shh, no use for me. And now we've worked on the work keys. We've tried to, with the GPS bill, with the work keys, we're trying to stimulate more interest in staying in school and being able to do something when you get out of school. And I think this exit exam, we have found that it absolutely doesn't do what we thought it would do to begin with. And I think we've all agreed with that pretty much. And so because of that, I think we need to, because we've putting other things in place that are positive things that can help kids, and I can't see that this has helped any kids at all. So anyway, that's my reasoning.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Keller.
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing it forward. And as a teacher trained, you know, and I understand the value of tests and have given a lot of tests, and know that there's a lot of, it's very, very difficult to make a test that measures the efficiency of where a child is at. And I agree with you that this not only didn't do all of what everybody thought it was going to do when it was put in, however, the perception out there is that it's an accountability measure. And even though it's a low proficiency requirement to get there, I could vote for this amendment. The reason is because if we remove it, we're sending a signal that is exactly opposite of what we want to, and that is that we want to increase the rigor. In other words, if we want to raise the bar and then remove all requirements for diploma Philosophically, I just couldn't go there. But I do understand your concern. I mean, I do understand your negative reaction because I have them too. I mean, I used to, when I give tests, in the settings that I have taught, the biggest reason I would give the test was for a learning tool, not an assessment tool. You know, and that's just the way we think of it, you know, as teachers. So when you use an assessment tool like this, and then the administration of it, and all the different ramifications of who's taking it, all the whole scale of kids, it's a very difficult process that we've learned a lot by having gone through the process. But I think it's a real mistake to just leave the vacuum right now. So I will not be voting for it.
Okay, and of course we're putting this on the bill that has another test. It's not the high stakes test, but it would be an assessment that would be there and would be recorded on the transcripts in the senior year. So we have a substitution test. It's not or substitution assessment that would be in place within this bill. And the only thing that I would offer is that Representative Wilson, would you consider a friendly amendment to have a delayed implementation of what's it going to take us? It's going to take us at least a year, a delayed implementation of the removal of the high school qualifying exam, so we have time to get these things in, this other assessment in place. At the time, so we delay it by Mr. James, what would it take as far as for removing this test and implementing work keys, as far as being able to integrate that into a system that would make that meaningful? Do you have
Mr. Chairman, under our current assessment contract, the high stakes component is integrated into the 10th grade assessment. So I don't think that we're going to see anything in terms of pulling that out of the assessment. I think it would continue in our assessment program. It just wouldn't restrict a student from not getting a diploma. I think that would still, the assessment piece would still be administered. The work keys, we're talking about moving it from 11th grade to 12th grade. We're on schedule for every 11th grader to take it next year. So, I don't know, move it out a year.
Would that be a friendly amendment to delay implementation for a year?
Well, probably be okay for me, but it probably wasn't going to be okay for the kids that failed. But see, I think that it's a negative. It's an absolute. When the kids take that test, they all know who failed it, and I think it's just a real negative thing for the kids that failed it. And you know, we can vote on the amendment or on the amendment to the amendment. I mean, that's up to you.
Okay. Mr. Jeans.
Mr. Chairman, if you want to repeal the high stakes component, that could happen immediately. What I'm telling you is we're not going to go and adjust our assessment test next year to take that component out. It will still be there, it just won't have the high stakes nature. And we won't be reporting back out whether or not the students met the high stakes component. But I think you could repeal it effective immediately.
Okay, well, I'll withdraw that request, and we could look at that as a future amendment if we want to. So are there further questions on the conceptual amendment number 7 is to remove the high school graduation qualifying exam as a high stakes test?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman?
Right, Representative Benjamin.
I want to be consistent and ask the department what their response would be to the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, we've already discussed this with the State Board of Education. The State Board of Education is in support of keeping the current high school qualifying exam until such time that there's a replacement or another high stakes assessment to replace it. The State Board was not ready to give up the current high stakes test and simply replace it with the work keys, because work keys is informational. The high stakes high school qualifying exam keeps pressure on school districts to evaluate students' progress through the standards-based assessment and to help students achieve or to pass that high school qualifying exam. So the State Board sees it, currently sees it, as a way to keep pressure on the educational system to help students succeed.
Further questions or comments? Representative Gardner.
I'm not sure how to phrase this, but the intent of the high stakes element was to make sure, as I understand it, that a diploma means something. It means more than just having committed, met the seat time requirements and the minimal class requirements. To my way of thinking, the reason we want a diploma to mean something is so that students, the community, employers know some minimal basis that the student has mastered, but anybody who can look on the transcript and see how they did on the work keys knows where they stand in terms of applied mathematics, reading for understanding, and reading for comprehension, whatever the other one, third one is. I can't think off the top of my head. So I don't see any reason personally, and I'm going to support the amendment as it is.
Okay, and I would just, my comment would be that we did have the graduation work group, which met for, I don't know, about six times, I think is what we met, five or six times. And the high school qualifying exam was identified by that group as being a detriment in student achievement. Now, there was one person in that group that was a teacher that felt that, gee, she had these students that were non-performing alternative school, and it was the only thing that kept those kids, if they wanted to graduate, that was the hammer that she had to utilize it. So there was that, and I mean, there were about 12 or 15 people there that participated in that, and the rest of the group, and eventually that argument won consensus, even with, but that person had brought up that for that particular alternative school, it was the hammer that she had to make them work on certain aspects. Now, so I just want to bring those up. But the consensus of that group was, and the recommendation to the State Board, which the State Board didn't take, was to remove the high stakes portion, basically adopt this amendment. So it's a policy call that the legislature has to make. The legislature made a policy call when we put this in, and the legislature should have the entire ability to look at it, to take it out or leave it in, as depending on what legislative policy is. Representative Benjamin.
Call the question.
Question's called. And the amendment number 7 is conceptual as to remove the high stakes nature of the high school graduation qualifying exam.
So we have amendment 7 to HB 206. Representative Munoz.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
Yes.
Representative Edgemond.
Yes.
Representative Keller.
No.
Representative Fuch.
No.
Representative Gardner.
Yes.
Chair Seaton?
Yes.
I have five yeas, two nays.
So by a vote of 5-2, conceptual amendment number 7, inserting a new section to remove the high-stakes nature of the high school qualifying exam has been adopted. So we have some additional information coming back from the department, and we will put this bill aside and take it up at a later date. And it is 9:58. Thank you. And we will be adjourned.